welcome to Hooked. My microphone is on, as are my guests, and this is definitely the first time we've recorded this intro. I am
just telling on yourself.
Oh, well, if I didn't do it, someone else would. I'm Zancy Weber, and we are here to give you lots of plot hooks to use in your role-playing games. With me tonight are
Dom Guilfoyle
and
Tully Grimley.
Welcome, everyone. How are you feeling?
Having a lovely day. It's a new week. We're recording on a completely different week to the last one.
Yeah, I'm wearing a different shirt and outfit. I've got a hat. It's fun.
It is fun. Yeah. It's a fun hat.
I'm hungry.
More fruit than I have ever seen you wear before.
Oh, yeah. I don't eat it. I'm strictly like raw meat only diet.
That would explain the flies.
Yeah. Mm. And yeah, just like the constant shake in my hands. That part isn't a joke. Like, just look at these. Look at these go, guys.
That's actually frightening.
It's amazing.
I have an essential tremor.
Hooray!
That's my
Welcome
fun
to a
for
peek
the week.
Behind the curtain.
Yay.
So if you're joining us for the first time, we take inspiration from a Magic the Gathering card, a random card provided by Scryfall.com.
Scarfall!
Scarfall.
Yes! I love Scar. Let's do it.
And a random word found on randomwordgenerator.com. And we create some plot hooks for you to use or not use in your games. Perhaps you just get fun out of listening to a podcast. So this week, I have a getting to know you question. Now, Dom, this is an easy one for you. It is. It's what is your favorite a spec fiction text?
That's not an easy one.
You consume so much speculative fiction.
Yeah, that's why it's not easy.
Well, what is the last one that you've read that you've enjoyed?
I'm currently reading Book 8 of The Expanse. Tiamat's Wrath is the name of this one. It's the eighth book in a sci-fi novel series.
That is the one that's been...
It's a TV series now,
Netflix series?
Amazon now. Yeah. It was sci-fi and then they cancelled it because they cancel all their good things.
That's
and
true.
Now it's going to be on Amazon Prime Video, which, you know, it's a pretty good adaptation. I've only watched the first season. No, it's the first three seasons. They were on Netflix Australia for a while, but yeah, that's pretty good.
And how true to the source material is it? Or do they go in a different direction?
It's pretty true. Like, some differences every now and then. They've merged some characters. They've brought characters in earlier that, like, one of the, like, a really important character who joins in the second book, Christian Avasarala, she is like one of the main characters in the first season. Like, they kind of make it, it doesn't quite work, to be honest, in the first season because she doesn't have much to do because she hasn't been introduced into the main plot yet, but they have like focuses like she's going to be important going forward, so she's a main character. It's quite good. I honestly think like the books are good. They are a little bit like they're it's a yearly thing and it's two authors like collaborating on them. I feel like a lot of the time they could use a bit more time percolating because it kind of repeats stuff sometimes in the books.
Yeah,
like every now and again, like characters have meaningful conversations in the dining room of the ship, whatever you call it, like the mess hall. And one of them walks in. They go to the replicator. They get some food. They're studying the food. They have a difficult conversation. They put the rest of their food in the replicator and leave. That's a common scene, and sometimes it happens. Like, the scene is 40 seconds long, seemingly, but, like, eats the dinner and leaves during the scene. It's just, like, they kind of don't...
Storming out of a conversation only works if you do it rarely.
It's just, like, it gets a bit repetitive, but the show does some stuff really well. Like, the first book in particular, like, there's not enough inter-character conflict. They all kind of get along pretty well, and in the show, it's a really... It's the main character start off in a really bad situation, and there's a lot more... infighting, which is probably
because I've watched the TV show. I have yet to decide whether or not I was going to read the books.
I like the books a lot. The TV show, it's quite faithful, I think, for the most part. But yeah, like especially early on when things are really bad for the main characters in the book, they're all kind of just getting along because, you know, like in the book, it's just like they've been in a ship for years. Like they know each other, they're friends. Whereas in the show, they've been in a ship for years. They work together. They don't like each other. It's a very different vibe
they don't
early on.
Get along.
And then they become like a family sort of thing.
And what about you, Tally?
Definitely one I read... probably a year and a bit ago. It's called The Wind Up Girl. And it's set in Thailand. Essentially, the oceans have risen. They've built a giant wall around areas of Thailand to keep the tides out. And this is, it's called biofiction or something like biotech. And basically, the idea behind it is there are companies that control crops. They control what crops are released, what seeds are released.
I believe Biopunk.
Biopunk, that's the one.
Biopunk.
Yes. And so this is a society in which the rich can afford fruit, can afford, you know, these different crops that have come out. But companies are only releasing the seeds to the farmers that'll die out the next season, so you have to buy the new ones.
Wow, that doesn't happen in the real world at all.
Yeah. No, not at all. Yeah. And it's this beautiful mix of action and world building that gives you enough of the world that you want to keep exploring it, but gives you enough of the action that it's not just a book of setting.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I've just finished reading a collection of short stories called Rogues, collected by George R.R. Martin.
Yeah,
he has put some into it. It's really good. I more and more am leaning into the shorter fiction. I mean, one of my favorite books of all time, or series of books, I should say, are The Live Ship Traders by Robin Hobb. And that is super long. I highly recommend Rogues because they just go through, it's just kind of they're picking a theme, of which case, like, what is a rogue? Someone who isn't fitting in, or someone who is a criminal, or what, and the various different meanings that can have across different fiction. And yeah, really, really interesting stories. So,
cool.
I do really enjoy curated collections of stories that aren't necessarily linked, but they're linked thematically.
Yeah, yeah. I guess George R. R. Martin, again, has done a series or created a world collaboratively with a few other authors called The Wildcard World, where basically something happened and alien virus, people get superpowers and some people don't get good superpowers. But it is...
Did you mean misfits?
Did you mean heroes?
Yes, but this
X-Men?
Was written in the late 80s.
That's being adapted, or it's like another.
I believe so, yeah. Well, and there's a book that was released 4 years ago, which is a follow-up collection of short stories, and another one that's going to be released later this year, and I think it is being adapted. But yeah,
and like that, the announcement of that immediately got just internet dickheads being like, why isn't he finishing the books of the Winds of the Winter? When's that coming? It's like, well, probably because it's
when
not
when he writes it.
Yeah, it's like probably partly because people like you are making it no fun for him anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
It's fun.
I mean, I would have quit if I were him at this stage with people putting this much pressure on me to finish my book. I'd be like, nope, you don't get a book anymore.
I would have faked a heart attack just to scare them.
George R. R. Martin was rushed to hospital for no apparent reason.
Yeah, no, there was a Clickhole article, I think it was, where it's just like cackling George R. R. Martin burns finished draft of Winds of Winter on live stream. That was pretty funny.
Oh, good. All right, well, let's get into it. So our card this week is the Salt Road Patrol. So it looks like it's set in a desert, a heavily armored caravan or wagon of sorts with some sort of very enclosed carriage making its way through like harsh desert with sand everywhere. And it looks like it's making its way through like a giant rib cage of a even bigger creature. So that's what the card is. And our inspiration word is agony. So it's going to be a fun episode, everyone. Brace yourselves.
Be prepared for a skip through the flowers.
Well, does anyone have a pledge that they want to throw out?
I do. So it's an interesting historical thing that salt has been very important to civilizations throughout history because it's essential for, you know, our diet to get some sodium, but it's also very good preservative and it has been used as a currency throughout history. So my concept is it would probably need to be a lower fantasy sort of like can't just create things out of whole cloth sort of magic thing, but really kind of digging into that and having like civilizations based around salt and a salt war or something, a city in a salt plain that has the majority of the salt that is available and the conflicts that arise from that.
Yeah.
Going into using, like, parties would need to preserve their food using salt, and they'd use salt as a bartering tool. I just think, just salt, guys. Salt. It's so good.
So your pledge is
Salt.
My pledge is, like, yeah, conceptually, like, for the setting, really building on the importance of one resource, yeah, and making it kind of very, because it's versatile apart from anything else, but it's like making it important to all characters in this world.
Yeah, like, I mean, in a regular game, currency, even in its, yeah, most base coin form, is non-essential. Like, you can still barter for sheep and whatever, but if salt is not only the currency but also integral for, like, your survival, if you need salt to survive,
yeah,
you're literally consuming money.
Exactly. It's like in the first two Metro games, Metro 2033 and Last Light, where you barter using bullets.
Right. Ooh. Yeah, yeah.
It's just like you can, they're more powerful than the regular bullets because they were made pre-apocalypse, but then you're shooting your money away. And it's just like, yeah, I think it'd be an interesting twist on the kind of survival resource management stuff that often doesn't work very well, particularly in 5e. Yeah. I think that it'd be an interesting twist if you have to have that level of consideration and the fact that it's core to the world.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. I really like that as a mechanic. Mm.
And just hope that it doesn't rain.
Yes.
Someone, you get fobbed off, someone gives him some sugar, so it's like, oh, ropeable.
No.
Oh. Just like you see some ants crawling into your back and you go, wait a minute.
Wait a hot second.
But then they're secret mechanical ants that are stealing your salt grain by grain. We'll wait for the prestige.
Yeah. But I want to hear more about these secret mechanical ants, though. Okay, so my pledge is the characters come across in a desert environment, standing alone with nothing surrounding. They come across armor stands. They have human armor stands and livestock armor stands with armor on top and nothing else. They discover this freestanding in the desert. Cannot stress that more importantly.
So they could just walk up, take this armor, put it on.
Yep.
Stow it in their packs to sell later. Just free armor.
Free armor. The one thing is it doesn't seem to want to move.
Right, so it is, like, attached.
Not attached to the armor stand, but doesn't seem to want to move from its location. Seems fairly tethered to that.
Okay, so it's a mystery for them to solve.
It's a mystery for them to solve.
Okay, all right, so I guess we'll move on to my pledge, unless...
Well, it depends how much you want me to go into this before we go into the...
I think that's a fine pledge.
Yep, cool.
Unless there's more that you're absolutely set on.
Okay, well, I can keep going then.
No, let's dilly-dally a bit longer about whether or not we should continue.
I reckon we should discuss for another 5 minutes. Okay,
what
so...
What if we...
the goal is for your characters to put on the armor.
Okay.
Yes. I know this is something that you've got to work very hard to tempt your characters into.
Yes, it's not like, oh, this is just a full... plate mail lying on the ground. I put it on.
What's this?
Oh,
what's this?
You don't want to take magic or anything?
Don't want to...
What's this pedestal nearby with this poem written on it? It's like, look upon my works, you mighty in despair. Oh, I'm sure it's
I'm
fine.
I'm sure it's fine.
Just armor in the middle of a desert. Yep. Whatever.
So, our characters put on this armor and behind them appears, within the livestock armor appears, these rams that have been shown there and the carriage.
I see.
Yes.
And now the trap is sprung.
The trap is sprung.
All right. Okay. So my pledge is again taking inspiration from this exact scene. Now, I really want to explain this giant ribcage that they're walking through. So
it's,
I think,
enormous.
Yeah. So I think this creature is some sort of creature that is not only massive, but is also immortal. In the sense that it keeps regenerating and regenerating and regenerating.
Oh.
And so it has been brought down and somehow bound. And these people are harvesting it. But to bring agony into it, it's not just the creature. But inside this carriage, there is a woman who is the oracle. And for her to have her powers, she needs to drink the brain fluids of this creature and live in constant agony whilst just spouting the future. So this is the situation that you found yourself in. This is your introduction to this setting. You're walking through the desert and you've come across this caravan with transporting the Oracle to the source of her power, which is the viscera of this giant creature. Shall we turn?
Interesting. So just ducking back for a second to mind, agony comes into it because you put salt on a wound. That's agonizing. I think that it's interesting to make it.
I mean, even just eating too much salt is pretty agonizing.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do that. I think that, yeah, like the low fantasy sort of like minimal magical stuff could be really helpful for this sort of setting.
There's the conceptual agony of just eating away at your currency, though.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. It's just, yeah. Oh, I'm so good at this. so, yeah, I think that the progression, the next step for this is obviously that conflicts arise over the resource and that cities would be founded on salt mines, as is the case in human history, and that basically by working the trade routes and protecting people and like having, you can basically have the party be very involved in the development of civilization and the impact that the trade routes and stuff have, because like it's kind of always very background. The inner workings of the systems of a game setting. I think that if you were to base a campaign, possibly not a long one, but a campaign around the economics of a war and of like the development of these civilizations, and kind of have the impact of the players be felt in a more economic and civilization's development and development sort of way, it would be interesting.
I mean, taking that into account when you say war, I think it'd be very interesting, like these cities built on salt mines, if suddenly they are mining and they discover that this same vein of salt has been mined out from another direction. And they don't know, and basically all around whichever way they go, they see that it's come in.
Everyone's mining towards this salt hub.
Yeah, like they thought that they had the rights to this mine because they had controlled this area, but people had pilfered their reserves. Maybe that is the cause of this war.
Or even just like quest line within, it's just like, who's been pilfering our salt? Or you could work as like salt, like smugglers or even or something.
Yeah,
like
there's
kind of basing it in like an economic but also very practical way. It's kind of an interesting way to start with.
And you could always like have that ticking clock of like the city will crumble
without salt.
Without this reserve of salt, they can survive for maybe a year before they run
it's
out. Salt.
It's
of
a
currency.
It's a boom, but it'll end.
Here's a situation: is that and it brings back into that in that the skeleton rather than a creature that is still alive, there is. Their only food source is in a barren environment. This city's only food source is a species of creature that comes around once in a blue moon. In fact, maybe once in a couple of years. It's enormous, but they need to preserve every single piece of this when it comes by, because they're not sure when the next one will come. And that is why they need such enormous amounts of salt, is for the preservation of all the food they will be... All of the red meat that you eat.
If you're in a desert, it'd be like very much. There's not going to be much fresh food as well. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, I guess we should put a name on this city or this civilization.
I don't know. It's not necessary. Yeah. Salzburg. There we go.
A name that has never been used before.
Saltstopia.
Yeah, saltastic. I'm not sure. Like, I guess it's a very kind of conceptual, kind of vague sort of.
I mean,
idea
we could just call it
around.
A city of salt. Or
the
like
city
that.
Of salt. Yeah, I think it's more like a vein that can run through a campaign setting is almost what I'm kind of thinking for this one. Yeah.
All right. Well, shall we move on?
Beautiful. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking this is. I want to call this the Enchanted Cartel. And so the
cartel.
Yes. Mm. And the turn for this is once our players have put on the armor and this cart and creatures have appeared behind them, they can now see the inscription on the cart, which is that if they manage to take this cart to its destination, which is a war front, then they get to keep the armor. and half of what is inside the car, the carriage.
Right. So someone's put it there so that someone that is not them has to risk the travel.
Risk the travel, exactly. But if they take it off, then they are solely responsible for the deaths of everyone on the warfront.
All right, all right. I think yeah. So if they take it, so this is a way of introducing a storyline,
yes.
Basically a quest to it. I mean, because it's just one. Is there any other than the animals? It's just like goods and chattels in the wagon. Is it just just one carriage, or is it a caravan? Or
I had originally thought of it as one carriage, but actually an entire caravan that you lead would sort of bring this to a larger scale, wouldn't it? If yeah. it's you only see the two pieces of armor or the four pieces of armor or whatever, but when they put them on, suddenly the entire caravan appears behind them, almost yeah. a ghostly caravan, which is a better name for this segment as well.
Ghost wagon train, yeah.
They get to keep the some of the spoils of war. They're promised the uniforms and the equipment of soldiers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so wherever they go, this caravan will follow. I think whether they keep the armor or not, this caravan's going to follow.
This caravan is now following them, yeah. no matter what, and they have to take it to the warfront or die trying.
Or just have this entire caravan walk it, following them yeah. through a city.
That's going to be fun in dungeons.
Yeah, and people will like see just like, you were supposed to, we know you. You lead the dread caravan sort of thing. It's like, you're the reason the war effort failed.
Especially if you're traveling through like a war-stricken
area.
Country.
You have the flags of whoever lost in front behind you.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So I'm not sure where I wanted to go with the Oracle living in agony, but I think it's always a really fun thing to introduce to a game where someone is making prophecies and whether or not those prophecies are going to come true or whether you fight to thwart them and give your players that choice. And I guess as a DM, you have to figure out whether or not these are thwartable.
Yeah, if they're definite or if they're going to be altered.
Yeah, and like D&D or like dice rolling systems being what they are, like how you're going to deal with the fact that the players aren't going to do what you expect them to do.
And also the dice might also not do what
yeah,
you want
well,
them
yeah,
to do.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be like you either need to be...
You need to bargain for perfect success and perfect failure and still be able to make this happen, or it needs to adapt.
Yeah, it needs to be a super wishy-washy worded sort of thing. It's just like, I guess I can... It's like a horoscope. It's like, I guess that came to pass?
Yeah, yeah. I guess I did well in business but not in love.
Yeah.
Today?
No, you just
and
do
the
it,
business
you...
was people and the love was of money.
Yeah. The prophecy is just a description of a traditional hero's journey. It's just like, you will enter a cave but overcome it. And just like, I guess I kind of, metaphorically speaking, I did. Yeah.
I guess like a tavern's a kind of cave.
Yeah.
Well, maybe...
The real cave was the friends we made on the way.
Those are bad friends. That's not what the cave's supposed to be.
Instead of focusing on the prophecy, maybe we focus on like the various capabilities of this animal flesh, because obviously it's too big to be like sufficiently guarded. So
you need salt. It's so big.
Well, it's constantly regenerating, so it might be a bit of a thing where you're actively encouraged to go harvest, because if it regenerates too much, it will fight back.
So it's a race to it's a conservationist's nightmare. You have to harvest just enough that it doesn't grow back, but keep enough that it keeps growing back.
We've got
to
cull those kangaroos.
It's them kangaroos.
so maybe it is some sort of this setting is about getting these unknowing people to harvest this flesh and either do it on their behalf, or if they're going to take it for themselves, the monstrous things that could happen if you consume it in any way. Because if the brain fluid gives prophecy, perhaps the muscle
gives strength.
Well, it gives strength or just
diarrhea.
or you just like one arm grows entirely too big to be.
Oh, we're to back to that.
Is this three episodes ago?
Is it three episodes?
We don't release these in order, so who knows?
Welcome to the cult of asymmetry. But I guess it's really up to the DM. Like, I guess looking into the culture around the.
Well, are we then harvesting bones to make weapons and armor?
Yeah.
Or yeah,
like
I guess,
the skin as well. Like, are you making like leather and tanning the skin of this beast?
Is this skin an almost impenetrable leather?
Is this entire society like not only based around like feeding off of it, but like using all parts of this beast and stuff?
I guess it would be. And it's a weird resource in that you're not trying to keep it exclusively to yourself. You're inviting people to come take from it because otherwise we're all going to die.
Can I pose something of scale? We've noticed this rib cage, you've said.
Yeah, well.
Can we imagine that this is part of a tail or a tendril?
Yeah, nice.
And that the entire civilization is built out of the larger bone, something like a hip or a skull.
Yeah.
Maybe it was originally felled so long ago, like they don't know how this incredibly large beast was felled and they don't think they could do it again as well as in
Yeah, well, absolutely. Maybe it was some sort of act of God, of a God that killed this
like
mighty beast.
It's like a continent-sized monster.
Could be the act of a mighty beast that killed a god.
Perhaps a god in this form.
I like to think of the all the different things you could harvest from it. Like, it could be very creative as well. So like you harvest from the eyes and stuff, and you're able to create like lenses and stuff out of the
absolutely.
Or like this, it maybe has scales. Maybe like the its
you go
teeth,
into the pits of the stomach,
the saliva. Yeah, like you could like. Maybe it's like a million uses in one, this creature. I think that'd be a really interesting sort of thing to
So this
explore.
Is actually a completely half-devoured beast that keeps growing, that we're just pulling bits off.
Yep.
All right, well, that's a turn. Which one do we want to look at a prestige for?
I don't know how to prestige mine, to be honest.
Yeah. Well.
Maybe.
Well, it's low magic.
Yeah.
So I think the prestige is twisting the world a little bit, and it's hard to do with low magic.
Well, maybe the way you do that is to introduce like a bit more high magic, and there's some monsters that feed on the salt, or maybe they're made of the salt monsters.
Can I pose something?
Go on.
That the salt is not just salt as we know it, and your party that comes across this is wandering into a new land and discovers that this salt is actually dampening magic, and this society that's built on salt is actually completely unaware of what it's doing. They've never known magic. And so you have characters that are suddenly able to do these things and they are amazed. Mm. They don't know what's going on.
Yeah, so it's like you cross the border and you're just like, hey, have some of this salt. And it's like, this doesn't taste like what I know salt to be like. This is actually kind of sweet. It's the opposite. What's going on here? Having it be called salt, but maybe it's not the salt that we know, is an interesting idea. Yeah.
Yeah, and so if that's the dampener, then maybe the people that are harvesting it are literally harvesting it to get rid of this dampening effect so they can invade.
Ah. And so it's actually the fact that this land is so salt dependent is not dependence, it's defense.
Yeah, or just like a happenstance that this deposit has
protected.
Been here, and so the ancient people, or the people who settled here eventually, settled here because they were safe from magic users. Yeah.
Why would it? Sorry, is it the consumption of the salt that's dampening magic? Like, because if so, wouldn't that make the people of the civilization vulnerable to outside people who have magic because they haven't been eating the salt?
Well, if the people who are consuming it are have their magic dampened, I would assume they also have resistance to that same magic.
I mean, interesting. Yeah, that could be.
I think it's more in the concentration of salt in the earth actually has the dampening effect.
Yeah, sure.
Atmospherically.
Field,
And
so that's interesting for any role playing that happens if you are crippling your magical characters.
Mm. Mm. Take that, magical characters.
Yeah, screw you, wizards.
I mean, that's one way to do it. Or, like you said, like have magic reintroduced in the form of like monsters or what have you that kind of come up from these mines, if there are like salt elementals or
the neighboring pepper nation could attack. I think I'm not sure a way I think that it's it's a little bit, maybe a little bit snookered in, as a concept, in that it's supposed to be kind of
supposed to be a setting and not so much.
Yeah, and it's not. It's also not supposed to be an elaborate setting. It's supposed to be like kind of.
You can apply this to your
real world history, kind of, that doesn't get explored in fantasy settings, kind of being brought in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think even just the prestige could just be that the salt really has nothing to do with the story. It is everyone reacting to the salt and this resource.
It's just like what the civilization is kind of built on, and then, you know,
when you take that away, what happens?
Yeah.
Okay.
Beautiful. Okay, so we've got this caravan following behind us, and we are eventually convinced that we have to make it to the war front. We get to the war front, and it turns out that whoever is at the front lines doesn't want to share those weapons or that armor. They don't want to give you what you've been promised, and so you have to fight with them, or you have to leave empty-handed.
See, I think a great prestige for this one would be that the war was fought 50 years ago, 1,000 years ago, and that everyone is already dead. And so to make the delivery, you need to call up the ghost or resurrect someone to make the delivery so that you're not carrying this burden forever.
Or maybe the battle is cursed in some way and both sides are still fighting. They've been fighting for years and you turn the tide by better equipping one side. Maybe this equipment is in some way enchanted to be able to turn the tide of this cursed battle or something.
Yeah. To kind of bring it back to the ghost caravan idea that you had in the ghosts, that long fought, is bringing this actually brings back the army, but with no opposing force, and you've just created the next big bad.
So you've brought back a ghost army, and they look around to see where they want to conquer.
Or maybe
you have some weapons and armor. They've thanked you, but you've just unleashed a terrible force upon the world.
Or maybe as a DM, you're kind of getting over this campaign. You're kind of letting things get a bit silly. Maybe you just give your party an army, and then you're just like, "Hey, these guys are on your side now.
What are you gonna do?"
Cool. That's something that your party has now. And
guess
maybe
we're invading Brazil.
Yeah, maybe things get a little bit crazy in your campaign. That could be a fun way to go. Not sure we should be encouraging people, like necessarily aiming towards people who are sick of their campaigns with these plot hooks, but, you know.
I mean, the end of one campaign is usually the beginning of another.
Yeah. It's like everyone rolls a new character that's the opposite of their previous one because they were so sick of playing a paladin, they just want to be a warlock.
My first character was a paladin, and I liked her until she died.
Oh.
Yep. So, it was sad.
So how do we prestige your
I think the creature has to come back to life, right?
Is it dead?
Well, it's not dead.
It's sort of in stasis.
Yeah, it's bound and weakened.
I missed that. Yeah, my idea was that it was just so thoroughly harvested at this point that it can't do anything. Like, it's just like
yeah,
they've already got
absolutely.
The
so
it's conscious the whole time, was my thought.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so it is. It's conscious and it keeps regenerating, but like they keep getting people in to take from it, or otherwise it will regenerate to a point where it can revive itself and fight back
revives itself.
Well, yeah, I think I don't know why or who.
I've got an idea.
Oh, please.
But you were saying
something. Oh, yeah. Okay, it revives itself and it starts regenerating at enormous rates that you can't keep up with, and the beast closes around the party.
And you have to
fight your way out of this enormous beast.
I think a lot of campaigns are like it's always building to a point where you wind up inside a monster. That's something. Yeah. My idea would be that everyone's coming in, they're harvesting it. It's kind of borderline harmonious the way that everyone's just getting their resources from this thing, and then it's less harmonious, and a war breaks out, and suddenly they're not like the harvesting effort is lessened by the fact that there's now this conflict happening and people are like trying to stop the war because they see what's coming.
Because the creature is growing back.
Yeah, like with all of these, beat your swords into plowshares and plow some skin out of this monster or it's going to regenerate. And then maybe the party helps with the diplomacy, or maybe they help one side of the war win so they can get back to harvesting, or maybe
your crazy druid wants the creature revived.
Ah, twist.
Becomes best friends with it the and crazy destroys
druid.
The army.
Are druids the bad guys in our, like, we, like this is yes. the third time that in this recording like block that we've had druids just ruining everything.
I think it's because we so often pit man against nature, and druids are the representative of nature.
They are that.
Yeah.
And we are biased towards man.
Well, and yet the druids are generally like among the most thematic as far as which is makes playing them very difficult sometimes.
Also, I love that we've taken this, which is a very like tight image, and we've made big bads.
Yeah,
expansive world ending fights.
Yeah, it's just excellent. it's just some guys that are leading a ram with a cart, and it's just like, no, the world's ending.
The world's ending. I'm sorry, guys.
Run. Sorry, now we have a ghost army.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's been us again for this week. If you want to use any of those concepts in your own games, feel free to. If you want to use them for anything else or share the word, please get in touch with us first. We are released under a Creative Commons license, which means that you can use it privately, but not publicly. So get in touch with us if you don't know what that means. You can also find more information about that and all the rest of the podcasts on this network, and thatsnotcanon.com. If you want to get in touch with us, if you have some artwork perhaps that you want to submit for inspiration, you can send us an email at podcast_hooked@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Thanks again, Dom, for coming along.
Thank you. I like the idea of people submitting their fan art that's been inspired by our ideas, which were inspired by magic cards. I like the cyclical sort of, yeah.
That's what we're here about. We're here to recycle.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Reduce, reuse, we're recycle, reanimate.
Yeah, we recycle those giant monsters while they're conscious and in agony.
And thank you as well, Tully.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll be here same time, same place next week. Until then, everyone, bye.
Bye.